Blog Talk Radio.
Introduction like that, where else could you be but at the door of Masonic Home Companion, the Root. Now we're known as Masonic Effects. Hello, everyone. It's great to have you with us again today. This is the 297th day of the year 2016. It's been just cooking along. Just as we'd expected, full of surprises, and as the year moves into a conclusion to the last 69 days, we can only wonder, as we always have, about what's coming next. It doesn't get any better than where we're at right now. It's always been this good. And we have all of the advantages of science and invention, and one would think the calmness of our own thoughts and being, because we have embraced a lifestyle, a way of thinking, a philosophy that is unparalleled in the face of the earth. Neither religion nor politic, neither doctrine, nor driven by demagogy. This is a place for contemporaries to join together in a singular frame of reference, a way, a need, a desire, an appreciation of the contemplative mind and ability. If people don't have that capacity to be contemplative or to be serious-minded, is really what that is, then don't come to the door of Freemasonry. Oh, well, we'll always take your membership, but but if this is an opportunity to savor, to explore, and to have all of the advantages of the world around us, of being able to talk at your age where you're no longer a student, no longer connected with those discussion groups where you're challenged. As an adult, you and I are expected to be able to commit, to be self-directed learners, to step above and outside of the mediocrity, the relative mediocrity of doing something solely for the purpose of profit. Now, in the past 100 years or so, the giants of capitalism, maybe 200 years, have reinforced the theme that it is a normal, ethical, and almost religious statement to be to accept the doctrines of capitalism, of the opportunity for great wealth by a very small number. Fast forward to 2016, where we have the tools to measure the effects, and now we realize for every one person that is being made a billionaire, there are hundreds of thousands of people living in abject poverty. The system, this experimentation, has proven itself imbalanced, and it's taken a long time for this machine to come to this point. although the intellectuals, the scholars, were able to examine the facts in the coldness of logic and come to this realization some time ago. And oh my, did they get smacked down. Oh my goodness, did they get smacked down. We get into all kinds of pre- and post-war rhetoric. Just absolutely ridiculous. And then just to distract us, we had some a very maniacal man trying to impose, to show the frailty of the world to the imposition by power of a singular mindset. Today we have all of the gifts of and resources that our ancient brethren worked so hard to produce. Now the amount of information in the world is doubling every couple of months, doubling the amount of facts. Now what we do with those facts is another matter. If we're clever enough, if we're smart enough to use what's available to us, that's on us. If not, that's on us too. Time will leave us as progress continues, with or without us. So you know what side of that line we want to be on? We want to be on the side that is continuing to make contributions and to continue to progress. How, you say, do we weigh in on this with our parochial or conservative or liberal attitudes? How does that factor into things? Is masonry designed for the conservative mind? Well, there's a lot of evidence out there that suggests far from it. Masons were given a set of guidelines that in that sense, initiated the questioning and pursuit of answers. So you take nothing for granted. Nothing for granted. You question, you reason things through for yourself. Only we're fortunate enough to be able to do it within the confines of a fraternal order. As things are evolving, some areas become stable that weren't stable before. Some areas of stability have foundations of sand and begin to become quite unstable. Some of the fabric of life frays at the edges. We now have a clearer understanding that we can deal with a great deal of the suffering around the world, but do we have the moral and ethical courage to act on that? Well, in these days of political uncertainty, where there's been an erosion in public confidence, in the general confidence to the authority figures, to politicians, to the media, this constant erosion of confidence needs some presence that helps people to keep the faith, to keep restore their confidence that there is a restorative moment in our future. And so today we come together at Masonic Effects to linger over this question just a little bit, but I need to keep a few things in mind. We'll get to a bit of music here that will help us focus and bring it together, and I think you'll like it. This is certainly some. I'm going to start with a song that comes from one of the top rated movies of all time. And just coincidentally happens to be my personal favorite, but I want to give you a bit of a framework with some quotations from Alexander Pope. A little learning is a dangerous thing. You and I have heard that. Alexander Pope came up. Drink deep or taste not the Pyrian spring. To err is human, to forgive, divine. Those move easiest who have learned to dance. No woman ever hates a man for being in love with her, but many a woman hate a man for being a friend to her. Pride is still aiming at the best houses. Men would be angels, angels would be gods, aspiring to be gods if angels fell. Aspiring to be angels, men rebel. Another that we'll leave here with, no on wrong, swift vengeance waits. Very structural. He's giving us observations for you and I to examine them for ourselves. They mean little until we do that. I'll just leave you with this. Teach me to feel another's woe, to hide the fault I see, that mercy to others show, that mercy show to me. It's an elaborate way of saying do unto others. That golden rule that permeates all significant religions in the face of the earth. But today I just was in such a mood to crack open some material on Baruch Spinoza, the Dutch philosopher. He was laying the groundwork in 18th century enlightenment of modern biblical criticism. Oh, you know, heretical. Well, it's a wonder the man didn't burst into flames. By today's standard, I can safely say that. In those days, there's no laughing matter. Peace is not an absence of war, he says. It is a virtue, a state of mind, a disposition for benevolence, confidence, justice. All things excellent are as difficult as they are rare. I think that's a truism. I think we can tend to live with that. I had the sense of a constant sense of time when I'm thinking about things Masonic, and that you'll see played out in our first song here, first musical selection. This is from Casablanca. Thank you. Nothing else. We're a classy bunch, the Masons. As time goes by, you'd almost think, if you thought about, if you read, started to read the history of Masonry, that we were an order that was fascinated with dead guys, that we wanted to look at the performance of these men who were socially committed, who were contributors to their communities. And we have volumes and volumes and volumes of material written about individuals. Interesting, men. We could be challenged, I think, reasonably, with that, by that standard alone, as being a cult of narcissists. That we're in this for aggrandizement, that we're in this to be recognized, that what we seek more than anything else is recognition for our acts of humility. In fact, that the sense of our sense of humility is transparent, that that really it's that craving for the understated praise. And I would take issue with that. It's a legitimate criticism if anybody out there would level that. But I think it is missing a significant point. These men, great and humble men, are measured in different ways at different times. The way we see them fits with the question that we are asking in the moment, just as it always has been. Does the person have purpose? Then what are their intentions? How transparent were their intentions? Well, considering that we are the order that was the first internet, World Wide Web, it's enormously curious that we haven't felt comfortable with that moniker. We haven't realized, perhaps, that our purpose, our gain, our history is the collective. And that when we're looking at the accomplishments the ghosts that went before us, what we're looking at are the molecules which are part of a larger atomic structures, larger organic structures, each performing a particular aspect in time. Does the short life expand of a fruit fly serve any purpose? It does if you're a fruit fly. So does each of those contributions, no matter the public awareness. In fact, you know, you hear at the end of the shows with Masonic Effects, me encouraging you to commit those random acts of kindness, and the grandest act of Masonic kindness are those that are committed when the person themselves knows nothing about you and doesn't see it coming. And it's not, and be sure of this, it's not an imposition. It's none of that thick-headed, I'm doing this for your own good type of thing. Mm-mm-mm. Those random acts of kindness are incredibly important because they contribute to the corpus of masonry. Each and every day, or whether you have the energy or not, masonry does not change you. You change you. Masonry will challenge you. It will provide you with options. But it doesn't take you to the table and make you eat from that feast. That's entirely up to you. So if you want to ask yourself and understand the nature of you, the man, as a Mason, then simply jump into that question. Have you made the changes that have been encouraged by your Masonic readings and Masonic study and observations? And every honest one of us, to every Jack one of us, will say, no, I haven't. Because there's the reality that there's always more, that when you put measures on an entire lifetime, there's no limit to what we need to do each and every day. It's almost ridiculous to be thinking in those terms. We do the best we can with what we have. This really asks us to think outside of ourselves, to think about the greater good of other people. And this isn't to do your carry on with meagerness. This isn't to exhibit our craft being meager, being indifferent, being insensitive, exactly the opposite. This is where we are expected to not only make our best effort, but to educate ourselves, to be able to explain or articulate some ideas, the more serious ideas. Not to be stopped in your tracks when somebody asks us the purpose of Freemasonry. Please, please, please do not give up the bumper sticker to make good men better. If that's all, you may absolutely believe it. The Grand Lodges may be promoting that notion, but think about it, how it comes across to the curious public when that's all we've got. They're looking for that opportunity to engage and to question. In order to do that, to be able to answer and to contribute to that conversation, we need to have thought that through ourselves in our own time, in the safety of being with brethren. But we've just come through an era where the craft was trying to keep, was It's been like watching puppies dream. If you know what I mean, you ever seen a puppy dreaming and you think they're just in that bliss state, but they're not really going anywhere, are they? It's just so happy laying there with a little twitching and little woofing and things like that. If you've never seen it, it's an amazing, amazing, very satisfying experience. And that to me is a reasonable reflection of masonry over the past 100 years. It's not that we've been in a slumber, but it served the needs of masonry were different over the past 100 years than they are in this bubble that we're in right now, this 10-year bubble, 5 years before us and 5 years to come behind. So we can hold ourselves out as an order and examine not what's available to us. Now what we've created is this questioning. We've done that. Masons have done that. Where previously there was none of that sense of the biggest question. The biggest question facing masonry today is that all there is? That came about because of writings. When Masonic material began to be written down, previous to that, Masonic training, Masonic the philosophy and the guidelines were given mouth to ear. And there was a sanctity to that. It wasn't broad discussion point. And there was a need to preserve the accuracy of those learnings so that they didn't deteriorate through translation. But this was of a time when symmetry was not necessarily being sought at the level that it has taken on today. We've exchanged the control of behavior as definition of symmetry within the Masonic order. In fact, our earliest notions of masonry remind us that there was a symmetry in the minds of men, of like-minded fellows, of good men, that the symmetry has to do with curiosity, with challenging the status quo. The status quo being those aspects of our culture, of our existences, that don't quite work. It's not that they don't quite work for the autocrats or the people with a little bit of power, the people that can hold you and I, that are dangerous to you and I, for whatever reason. This came from a time today, great, great confusion, where history was largely military history. And boys like me were brought up being taught and believing that the only history was military history, only to find in the 20th century that was only a very thin veneer over something much, much more dynamic and resolute than a military history. We're equipped. What we did, start to write things down. That was occurring because our cities were developing. Cities don't develop for the sake of ruining culture, ruining our landscapes or our views, or polluting the rivers, or making places deliberately crowded. Cities are an expression, and you can bank on this. Cities are an expression of culture. Cities are what bring culture to our world. Now think about that. So it is inevitable that wherever mankind has been and will be, that there will be a gradual growth and development of culture. After all of the confounding factors have been sorted out, where we act too timidly or act too rashly, all of that learning by our mistakes, learning by experience, when all of that is sorted out, it's that sense of culture that continues to develop. It isn't a box with culture written on the top of it that you and I open. It is the values of the day. It's our appreciation of the finer things in life that are the expressions of the finest aspects of humankind. You don't go to a young mother whose children are crying because they're hungry and ask her about the meaning of the finer aspects of humanity. That's just disgusting. You don't go to somebody who's worked all their life and become homeless for no reason of their own, but because of some contract or some banking process. Money, 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 money. Remember, we're in that period when we have been, remember the that song, Money Makes the World Go Round? Yeah. We've been selling that pretty hard for a long, long time until the bubble burst. It's not the first bubble that's burst. But this one really made a loud bang when it burst. And the scramble to try and patch up that bubble, well, that's been going on since 2008. Truth be known, we've changed. There is no going back. Our culture is evolving and rising with the development of culture is masonry, not competing. Perhaps one of the most interesting barometers for cultural development is masonry. Yes, it's difficult to experience for somebody like me that does have a sense of being sentimental. There's some things that I just look at the song, the first piece of music. As time goes by from Casablanca, of course I feel very sentimental when I hear that music. So there's my confession, but I don't think I'm the only one listening to this conversation that feels that way. Each of you in your own way will have those triggers. Not that you're governed by it, but that you can savor a sentimental moment from your past when sentimentalism isn't enough. Masonry steps in. We've relied very much on the notion that we have to, in order to preserve what we have to be cultural Luddites. that accepting any kind of innovation is wrong. It's going to be costly. It's going to take away from the control of the individual. Remember, we're not the only people, the only order that has lost track of itself over the course of how many hundreds of years. This is a difficult task. And how many commentators have you had the advantage to experience will talk about this? See, the complications of masonry were going on just short years after it was formalized into a governance structure constitutionally. Now, those aspects are important. This isn't an either or. But we have a very strange false confidence. We developed a very strange false confidence in a way of life that really was changing incredibly rapidly, and we were stuck with myths. The myths of personally, one of the greatest barriers was this myth that the country life was going to continue to produce good men who will step forward as their grandfathers and fathers have done and support Freemasonry. The myth was so curious because our cities have been continuing to grow. Agribusiness and equipment has continued to progress. Labor-saving device. Can you imagine somebody working in an unair-conditioned combine cutting a field of wheat for hours and hours and hours in 30-degree heat because he doesn't believe that that an air-conditioned vehicle is necessary? Well, let that same fellow give up his power steering on that machine, the power brakes, or the tracking equipment that allows him to put down an incredibly straight furrow that now allows him to calculate and measure the moisture in his fields to be able to, even today, not that he has to crush any of his growing crop, but he can actually use a tiny little drone, a couple of $100, to fly over and take photographs, infrared if he needs, to look at the quality of the field, what the weed separation is like, to do all of these things. Of course, we wouldn't give up these tools. It's not to say that every tool that comes along, it needs to be replaced. That's foolish. But it's equally foolish to not entertain what's coming along that does something faster and better and with greater consistency. Well, that is, unless you're an armchair farmer, unless you have that myth in mind, well, that's where I become sentimental. I like some of the cars from the 50s, but you remember trying to haul one of those things around a corner without power steering or pumping up the brakes? They were nasty beasts. They were just plain nasty. So what have we done culturally? We've relied on times not changing. There's been an influx, especially in Canada, there's been an influx of great movement of people across this country. The country is so huge. It's so vast, and it's so amazing. And it has different cultures within the framework of Canadian culture. And they're beautiful cultures. It's not like a competition. And we're good-humored about it. But what you and I did in the order was maintain this sense that in order to move ahead, we had to avoid innovation. And you hear that, you'll hear that a lot. Oh my goodness, yes, you know, this is heretical conversation we're having right now. Innovation is not allowed. In all fairness to the original Luddites, you know, that, ah, dear, 1779, this guy was, you know, known, he became known, his name is Ned Lud. He became known for destroying machines. He's sort of like Robin Hood. You know, he's there. That was a time when there were a lot of hands-on laborers, and if a machine came along, you know, threshing machines, and you know, you could just replace all these men with modern machinery. In the clothing industry and printing and the cutlery trades, there's lots of different areas. But it came out when things were really hard economically. So it's not like over our history, everything's just been rosy. And we're not, are we really talking about masonry being the gentry, the wealthy, the privileged? Good grief. Are we stuck in that? We're going to have to talk about that. Are we stuck in this post-colonialist malaise where we think, oh, thank goodness, if only we could live, if only the colonialists had continued to dominate and subjugate people and steal from them and make produce wealth and bring it back to the motherland. Wouldn't the world be a better place? Well, the country's become the city. Our children have become well-educated, and they're searching out opportunity. And this isn't like people, it's not like people move all over the world because they want to. A lot, wake up. A lot of the people don't live as comfortably and as smugly as you do. They're where they are because of necessity. They're trying to make do. And thank goodness that you have. Thank goodness that you have. But we joined up with people that were convincing us after all those struggles that in order to preserve this great, this really cool opportunity, we couldn't tamper with it. But when you look at the underpinnings for that, it's really interesting. Why have numbers dropped? Well, the cities have taken over, and the cities are much more cosmopolitan than I look around lodges that I've been in. And the lodges aren't as cosmopolitan. Some are, but they're not nearly with the proportion that I see when I'm walking out in the streets. And I just revel in it. I think it's amazing, this mixture of people coming for opportunity. They take nothing for granted. New people coming to our shores, first generation, second generation. It's fantastic. It's a synergy that is so good for this country and for us. But boys, times are a-changing. They have been. And it really doesn't matter if the Luddites continue. It really doesn't matter. The country communities have shrunk. There's just not enough jobs, not enough opportunity. And we're not talking about those fringe operations. Yeah, I can be hooked up and with the internet and work from wherever I am on the planet. I can work from the deck of my boat. But you can't create communities with that kind of process. And where's the manufacturing going? Well, we've put that offshore. We've also moved all the pollution and the degradation offshore with that. And heavy manufacturing, we've moved that as much as we can. My goodness, in this part of the world, even Stelco has been gutted by business processes. People that bought in order to extract great profit, not to produce steel. So it's gone. How did that happen? And we can say the same thing. Look at us now. We feel that it is something great and important and revered. But look at us now. We've become almost anachronistic. In too many conversations, we've become irrelevant. Nothing is sadder than having an old man saying something ridiculous with a great deal of vitriol or energy. That's sad. Not what he's saying is sad, but that he doesn't realize he looks and sounds ridiculous. M'lady this and m'lady that is not the kind of language we want to be using in the 21st century, gentlemen. We have some serious conversations still to create. Masonry has always given us those opportunities. Whether we make these kind of adjustments now or it waits for generations in the future, the adjustments will happen. Our culture here in Canada is continuing to evolve. And that's incredibly important. Don't think that keeping everything the same is to be safeguarded. I'm part of the clan processes that was put off the land, clearances, by the clan chief. It wasn't from some external force. And when my family came to Canada, hundreds of years ago, the process continued. Where people were moved around and the island was handled like a token, a party favor. Colonialism, eh? Keeping everything the same? Ridiculous. Are we desperate? No, maybe you are. Not at all. Not at all. The question isn't what to do, it's how to do it. Masonry is the nuanced conversation. That happens when the lights are turned down low and you're with friends. Too often, I see the conversation hijacked by men who can't control their emotion. They're pounding their little fists or they're upset or trying to make a point. All they're doing is covering up a weak idea by using their force and persuasion of personality. When you see this happening, when you hear it, sit back, open your eyes a little bit, and be very, very still. Learn. What's so weak in the idea that it has to be clouded or covered over with temper or aggression? Once you're through with that kind of childishness, once we are able to have a consensus of opinion at an intellectual level where the ideas begin to gel, then we'll make progress. People believe what they want to believe. It's true. Why is the world that way? I'm not altogether sure. Why to believe? It's reasoning, isn't it? People will believe stupid stuff. And sometimes you can actually, if you ever encourage somebody that has taken a stupid stance, I have a good friend of mine who I've heard say, because I want to, you know, like doing something ridiculous. Because I want, you know, well, that's something I would expect from a four-year-old, you know? And very, very energetic about it. Very, very energetic. But it's when you're able to see yourself as other people see you, see the world through the eyes of other people, then you know stuff. You know some things about the world that you didn't know before. Plato said, we can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark. The real tragedy of life is when men are afraid of the light. Here's a little bit of something and something. Thank you.
Thank you.